All right. So the title of my talk is Thick Trust, Thin Trust, HIV and Health Outcomes Among Trans Men of Color in New York City. I'm not going to talk so much about health outcomes today because of time constraints, but you're feel free to ask me afterwards. I actually want to start with acknowledgments. I want to acknowledge all participants in the study, support group coordinators, harm reduction programs and staff, and our funders, the New York State AIDS Institute and the Keith Haring Foundation. We have no conflicts of interest. So as probably many of you know, low-income trans women of color are the epicenter of an HIV epidemic, and they experience exorbitant rates of victimization as well as other negative health disparities. In another study that I was involved in, we found 48 to 49% HIV seroprevalence among African American Latina trans women. This talk is going to focus on resiliencies, and I want us to start to maybe reconceptualize, in public health, I've had the privilege of actually also coming from a critical academic background. And in public health, we tend to really focus on vulnerabilities and risk factors. But what I would like you to perhaps consider is that could vulnerabilities actually be manifestations from breaks or gaps within resiliencies in people of color and trans women of color communities? And so, for instance, I want to, you can just Google this, but I don't know if you're aware that African-American communities tend to have higher, more positive mental health than white American communities. And, when dividing, when they look at men and women, they see the same and in different age groups. I don't know about LGBT people, but, to me, that's indicative of a certain kind of resiliency in African-American communities that I don't see acknowledged in a lot of, let's say, African-American LGBT research. So what can a study and analysis focusing on resiliencies reveal? This study was conducted a couple years ago, and we looked at specifically people who attended transgender support groups at 5 New York City harm reduction programs. So in New York City, because a lot of trans people and trans women use syringes, our harm reduction programs often have transgender support groups and, have free syringe exchange as part of their programming. So these were the 5 4 different boroughs, the 8th Center of Queens, Bronx, Manhattan, Brooklyn, 2 in Manhattan, and the IRB was at Mount Sinai, Beth Israel. The focus groups were 2 hours long, auto-digitally recorded. Spanish speakers voluntarily translated for Spanish-speaking participants who had expressed difficulty with English, and every participant was given $20. So in the transcript, if you see SP, it means Spanish language, and all names are pseudonyms. So there were a total of 34 low-income trans people of color. There was actually one trans man we interviewed. We were going to interview a trans man's male support group, and that did not manifest in our study, period. But so 33 were trans women of color, and 13 were black identified, 21 were Latina identified, and 12 were recent immigrant Latinas. I'm going to focus in this talk on just 2 of the supports, 2 sites, one AIDS Center for Queens County in Woodside, Queens. And we had 2 support groups, a total of 6 immigrant Latinas, and Housing Works in East New York, total of 6 African-American participants. And you can see that the first group, the first site is mixed HIV status, and the second group is everyone with living with HIV, because that's a prerequisite for services from Housing Works in New York. Okay, I'm not going to go through all these codes, but I just want to say that this was, to make it scientific, it's a qualitative study that we did do very intensive coding analysis. So we looked at support, social support inside the support groups, and you can see there's a range of different types of social support that was available. And then we also looked at social support beyond the support groups, so like other agencies and also like kinship ties, other, with biological family or, other community networks. So something that was very interesting, especially with at these 2 sites, was there was very strong what's called alternative kinship structures that was evident. And this provided a kind of container for both thick and thin trust. And so what I mean by alternative kinship is that it was kind of like a family, an alternative family that was created. And thick trust is really built on what's called bonding social capital. And I don't have a lot of the citations in here, but when the article comes out, there will be. So I apologize for that. But bonding social capital is really built on emotional sharing, connection, intimacies. And then there's bridging social capital, what I'm calling thin trust, which is based on what I think we usually in public health consider social support, like information dissemination by healthcare providers, activism, advocacy, sharing of resources across disparate groups. So here's kind of a model of thick and thin trust in these alternative kinship structures. And what I thought was very interesting was that a lot of the thick trust behaviors and values seem to come from people of color, familial, community, microsocial, and subcultural networks and systems. And then the thin trust influences were coming more from agencies, community-based organizations, providers, activism. And so it seems like, having both of those in place actually then created resiliencies on the intrapsychic, interpersonal, and community social resiliency support levels. And, I would say maybe even structural, but I think that's beyond my talk right now. So looking, some codes of thick trust inside support groups, I'm going to go more in this, more in detail later, so I'm just going to not talk about this slide very much, but there's a range of codes we picked out. And so I'm going to first start with the Trans-Latina group, and I'm just going to read what's in yellow. So this is Raquel translating Luna. She says, the discussions that the girls have here in the group, she's learned a lot from them. And then Raquel states, the praises for Jovanka, who's the lead facilitator for that group, have to do again with how much she obviously cares for the group. It's the learning experience that they're feeling like they're learning things that they've never known before. Very supportive. And then Janice, someone else, talks about how Anna Lely, who is another participant, saying that how Jovanka has become her sole support, to be her escort to the lawyer, to the doctor, even to navigate the subways in New York City. And I really want to point this out because, this is like, for a lot of immigrant Trans-Latinas, like, the type of support they need is more than just references. A lot of times they will need escorting or companionship to these providers. Now, in terms of the Housing Works group, the second group looking at thick trust, so Tarita talks about, basically this is a whole dialogue of the different participants talking about how they support each other. So Tarita talks about, referring to Janet, she's so sweet, and then Janet says sugar goes good with the cream. And then Raven talks about, that money is supportive, but, creating support where individuals really help themselves, that's the most important thing. And, because everybody needs a little help along the way. I mean, I came here, I've made plenty of friends, I've made, oh my God, beautiful sisters, although most of them can get on my nerves at times. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but, there was also a lot of reference to each other, the other trans women as sisters, which also feeds into the familial kind of structure, alternative kinship structure. And then, then Raven is referring to Janet and saying, you were this, caterpillar in your cocoon with your hard shell that didn't want anybody to get next to you when Janet first joined the group. And basically, all I had to do was say certain things to you, and you fell right before me. Like, she kind of, fell apart, but also opened up. And Raven states, I've built, like, a sister circle here. This is more of the same. I was supposed to take that slide out. Okay, in terms of thick trust outside support groups, some participants did experience acceptance from biological family members, but many did not. And then there's also other types of kinship ties and community support. Now I'm transitioning to thin trust inside support groups. And you can see these are the range of the services that I think we're all very familiar with. Health and social services, also activism and advocacy, and more of the same with thin trust. So in terms of the social network among the Trans-Latinas, there was an extensive thick trust network established in 2005 comprising of more than 100 Trans-Latinas, and they even facilitated their own peer-delivered syringe exchange before ACQC funded funded them formally or had that support group as part of ACQC. So there was it's really fascinating. There's another article we're working on specifically looking at this and how people took on certain roles in this peer delivered syringe exchange, and it was all volunteer based. And there was this rapid dissemination of thin trust around syringe and condom use because there was a foundation of already established thick trust. So this is now the same group as a formal support group, and they talk about, Jovanka talks about, we already have 5 organizations working with the groups, and the interviewer lists some of them, ranging from legal to medical to anti-victimization to community organizations. And then at the bottom, you can see all the participants are clapping, they're all excited, and they're talking about how they network a lot and they network hard with all these organizations. Now, in terms of housing works, because they have the Ryan White funding, they're able to provide housing, food stamps, and healthcare support. And it's really interesting to see how when participants have their basic survival needs met, how they're able to now build on that foundation, along with the thick trust that I already talked about. So, for instance, one participant is actually creating a documentary film on LGBT domestic violence. And, this is something I rarely ever see among poverty class trans women of color who are mostly just focused on day-to-day survival. So she's able to now branch out, and I don't have a quote around that, but I'm not going to put that in here. But she really talks about how she's coming more and more out of her shell, extending beyond. And there was another trans woman, a participant who is attending college, and she's pursuing her modeling and acting career. She's living with HIV, managing all of that health and healthcare needs around that, and then also going to school. And she talks about how she wakes up at 4:30 in the morning every day to manage all of this. And so she has a life that's very full that I think is kind of, to me, very similar to like a lot of middle class people who actually I don't see waking up at 4:30, but managing school, taking care of their health, pursuing other activities, ambitions like modeling and acting. Okay, actually talks about this here. Okay, so anyway, this is just some of it. And I just want to point out how Janet, when she says Trinchin talks about getting up at 4:30, Janet says, girl, you're crazy. So the reason I want to point this out is because what we also noticed is the performance of thick trust in support groups. So what we saw was that there was a lot of times close physical proximity to each other, comfortable body contact, finishing each other's sentences, calling each other baby and other pet names, affectionate teasing, referring to each other with seemingly derogatory terms, yet in an affectionate, playful manner that wasn't taken negatively, and giving one another unrequested advice. And I think this is very interesting because I think this actually really buttresses the resiliency and specifically the mental health resiliency that a lot of the participants seem to have, in spite of like very extreme and harsh conditions they live in. So in terms of optimizing health, it's important that basic survival needs are met, and also that thick trust is a high priority in people of color communities and networks. And I would say even in white networks, and I can talk more about that in Q&A if you'd like to know about that. Because in another study, we also compared white trans women and women of trans women of color mental health, and there were some differences around that. Thick trust is necessary for thin trust to really operationalize fully, and both are needed for optimal health and lifestyle practices. So it's just a simple model of this triangulation of the having all of this in place. And that trans women of color groups are highly resilient. These two groups that I looked at, because they had intimate alternative kinship structures. And I'd love to see more research. And we're planning to create intervention development study based on thick trust and thin trust with much larger ends with this population to really look to how to maintain optimal resiliency flows to travel along networks, communities, and alternative kinship structures. And, structural policy changes and behavioral incentives are not enough without establishing thick trust foundations and systems. think that's about it. So thank you.